mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a new brand to move Findlay forward. The city's Strategic Planning Committee has begun preliminary work on creating a coordinated community identity, but many of the specific details have yet to be resolved. Also this morning, happening around town, Findlay Prays, a breakfast gathering to bring Christians of all denominations together for a local observance of the National Day of Prayer. And the Mayflowers are here, a perfect time to get outdoors with programs and events from the Hancock Park District. Michelle Rumschlag will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, April 29th, 2025. Okay, so first things first, the website is back up and running. Yesterday morning, our website for the show, goodmornings.net, was not functioning. It was knocked offline. It's a highly technical thing. I think there was a glitch in the configuration or something. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but it was fixed and back up online about 10 o'clock yesterday morning. But if you... because the website was down, that's where the podcast is served. So if you listen to the podcast of the show, or you tried to listen to the podcast of the show yesterday, depending on what platform you use to listen to the podcast, it may or may not have been there. Because normally we post the podcast about 9 o'clock, and so the platforms will check and update their list at that time. And the website was down at that time, so there was nothing new to add to the database. Some of the podcasting platforms go back and check regularly throughout the day. Others don't. So depending on which platform you use, if the podcast yesterday was not there, today it should propagate when it refreshes that list. So... just wanted to mention that, and the WFIN website was fine. It had nothing to do with the WFIN website, just our website. So, but that is back up and running, and so all is well with the world. So today, the president will mark his first 100 days of his second term, so his second first 100 days. Although, I believe the actual date for the first 100 days is tomorrow, but he's going to have a rally today in Michigan. Meanwhile, former Vice President Kamala Harris, whom Donald Trump defeated in the election last November, is expected to criticize Donald Trump's presidency in a speech in San Francisco on Wednesday. And I thought this was kind of interesting. I saw this on the Newswire. It says she will be speaking at Emerge, which is an organization that works to put Democratic women in office. Emerge, an organization that works to put Democratic women in office. And my first thought was, shouldn't they actually then have hired a speaker who won their election to office? I mean, if that's their goal... then you would think you would want someone who actually won an election to speak. But anyway, a person familiar with the event says Ms. Harris will take aim at Trump's economic policies and his influence on American institutions. So I know we're all waiting for that with bated breath, but the world of politics. This I thought was kind of interesting. Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, when it comes to spending on engagement rings, folks who live in Washington State are shelling out the most to get engaged. This is according to a new study by the custom engagement ring website Faithful Platform. All right. The study found that on average, residents of the state of Washington, not Washington, D.C., we're talking the state of Washington, Washington residents spend $10,109 on an engagement ring. $10,000. Now, you know the traditional saying that you should spend, what, 3 months' salary on an engagement ring? And people don't do that anymore because they say if they did, keeping up with inflation, you'd see Sometimes people spend in like $20,000 on an engagement ring. So people don't do that anymore. $10,000 sounds like a lot, and it is, but it is only about 12% of the average annual income for residents of that state. California came in second at a more reasonable $9,482, followed by Illinois, Kansas, and New Jersey in the top five in terms of actual dollars spent. Ranked as a percentage of income, Michigan actually is at the top of the list. They spend $8,535 on average on a ring, but that represents 13.5% of the annual average income people in the state. So, and Kansas is second in that ranking in terms of highest percentage of income spent. The state that spends the least on average, that would be South Dakota at a measly $3,005. By the way, for reference, the national average cost of an engagement ring in 2025, $6,527. Wow, that is phenomenal. I spent $1,000 when I got married 30 plus years ago. 35, it'll be 35 years, the end of 2025. And I spent $1,000. And that was a lot. That was a lot. I don't know what that would be in 2025 dollars. I should go and look that up and see how, well, or maybe I shouldn't. I'm not sure if I should or not now that I think about it. But that's what people are spending on average. I just saw the top and bottom of the list. I don't know where Ohio ranks in there. But I did see this in relation to that. I mean, that's how much we're spending to get married. If you're investing that much, you want your marriage to work, right? So this I thought was interesting off of TikTok. One user, Michelle Rossberry, asked her followers on TikTok for their marriage hacks, their little secrets to keep their partnerships going strong. And some of the pieces of advice were rather interesting. A couple of them were a bit diabolical, but see what you think. One person said, I occasionally buy gift cards, just randomly buy gift cards to various restaurants. So every time that my husband doesn't want to go out to eat because he says we don't have the money, I just pull out a gift card and say, oh, we have a gift card from back at Christmas. He said, we got it back at Christmas, or we got it for my birthday or whatever. And he doesn't remember, and so they get to go out to eat using the gift cards that she buys periodically throughout the year. That's a great idea. That actually is a terrific idea. Let's see here. One person said, whenever we get into an argument, we wear party hats. You know, like for kids' birthday parties, they sell little party hats. Whenever we get into an argument, we have a rule. We have to put on the party hats because how can you possibly argue with party hats on? How can you possibly be mean to someone when both of you are wearing these ridiculous party hats? I kind of like that idea. Say, keep those emotions in check with that. The most extreme piece of advice that Michelle Rossberry received upon asking for those marriage hacks, the woman who said, now this is going to an extreme, I divorced my husband and then remarried him so that way he knows I mean business. So when I threaten to leave, if he doesn't shape up and fly right, he knows I'm serious because I've done it before. I'm not saying you want to try any of those. I mean, you can go from one end of the spectrum to the other, but there you go. Marriage advice courtesy of TikTok. Like that. By the way, speaking of technology, new research suggests that people are more likely to trust legal advice given by ChatGPT even more so than advice given by a real lawyer. We have officially surrendered to our technology AI overlords here. According to this research, 288 people were given legal advice and asked which suggestion they felt was better advice that they should act on. And when people did not know whether the advice came from a lawyer, an actual lawyer, or from artificial intelligence, from the chatbot, they tended to pick the AI-generated advice when presented with both options in a blind test. The AI was selected more often. Researchers for the conversation said we also need to improve AI literacy so that the public is better able to critically assess the content. When people are better able to recognize AI, they will be better able to make some more informed decisions. But that's the I'm not sure if that is something that we need AI to do, or we need to educate the public better on how to recognize AI content. You know what I mean? That may be the what we really need to do. But that may be our doom and gloom story of the day. You know how every day we have to have some sort of society is doomed story? That may be it right there. People more likely to take advice from AI than from real experts in various fields, because largely we can't recognize the difference. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know, most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, something to consider as you are heading into work and getting heading into the office and getting your workday started here this morning. According to a new poll of 2,000 employed Americans, 73% of Gen Zers and 70% of millennials are looking for a job or a career change. 70% plus of Gen Zers and millennials. This is a survey from Talker Research. They found that 52% of the respondents in the survey currently feel burnt out at work. So more than half of your coworkers or managers, more than half of your employees feel burnt out. 23% feel that expectations at work have increased, but pay has not. According to Amy Mosher of iSolved, which commissioned the survey, burnout looks different across different roles and different teams on the job, so there is no one-size-fits-all solution, but listening to employees is the first step in designing work environments that support both performance and well-being amongst employees. So, bosses, let this be something that you take to heart this morning as you head to, you know, as you head to work, you get a work day started, and you want to create a better environment. Know that more than half of your employees are already feeling burnt out, and as many as 70% are seeking a new job. If you want to do something about that, let's think about this morning. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, showers and storms possible today with a high around 80, showers and storms possible tonight with a low in the mid-40s. The Hancock County Sheriff's Office says two people were injured in a crash west of Findlay. The Sheriff's Office said a 57-year-old from Findlay was eastbound on US 224 near Litzenberg Memorial Woods on Monday morning when she tried to pass two vehicles and struck an oncoming vehicle being driven by a 34-year-old from Findlay. Both drivers were transported to Blanchard Valley Hospital for injuries sustained in the crash. And then the Sheriff's Office said the 57-year-old had to be transferred to a hospital in Toledo for suspected severe injuries. The crash remains under investigation. Ohio's primary election is next Tuesday, and many school districts across the state have funding issues on the ballot.
1.8 million children walk into Ohio's public schools each and every day. But the future of their classrooms and the staff that serve them is more uncertain than ever before. Next week, voters will decide to support or reject proposed school bonds and levies. Decisions made under a funding system ruled unconstitutional by the Ohio Supreme Court. And it happens during a time lawmakers are shifting more public dollars to private schools, all fueling a growing fight over the future of public education in our state.
Finley City Schools has a 1% earned income tax levy on next week's ballot after a levy failed last November, resulting in a $6.1 million budget reduction. Get more on our website. The Finley Police Department says the local medication collection event held over the weekend was a big success. The police department says people dropped off nearly 142 pounds of old and unused medications during the drive-through event at the municipal building. Officials say the collection events are important to ensure old and unused medications are properly disposed of and that they don't fall into the wrong hands and get abused. A second drop-off event will be held in October. Don't forget, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Our cover story this morning, a new brand to move Finley forward. The city's strategic planning committee has begun preliminary work on creating a new branding for the city of Finley, but many of these specific details have yet to be resolved. Mayor Christina Mern is with us on the line this morning. And first of all, I guess we should start with this. The Strategic Planning Committee, this is primarily made up of city council members, but not exclusively. You are part of the Strategic Planning Committee. I know Hancock Regional Planning is part of this, and so on. Talk a little bit about the makeup of this committee. Who are the stakeholders here?
Yeah, so the Strategic Planning Committee members are myself, as well as the chairs of each of the standing committees of City Council.
Right.
And then Matt Cordonier with Regional Planning serves as a non-voting kind of advisor.
Okay.
But certainly all of our city staff and administration provide insight into different topics as they come up and try to work together to get things done on behalf of our community.
And the primary work and the big thing that actually started this latest development was the Finley Forward Plan that was adopted a couple of years ago. Folks may remember when we talked about this. And there were some who criticized the plan for its seemingly basic goals that we came up with out of this elaborate plan. Goals of a safe community, a well-run city government, a caring government, thriving business environment, an attractive and active community. These seem like pretty obvious goals, and some wondered, did we really get our money's worth in putting together a plan that came up with these pretty obvious goals?
Yeah, so I think they're correct. The goals are definitely not anything super exciting, and I think we could have identified those. However, I think the objective level and some of the identified actions on how we achieve that are where you start to see kind of Finley's unique character come out, right? Obviously, every community wants to be safe. We want to have a thriving business environment. You want to have affordable housing. You want to be an attractive place to live. So those, I agree, are not earth-shattering, but it's really in the details on the objectives and how are we going to achieve that within the kind of parameters of the City of Finley residents' expectations and how we continue to achieve those things moving forward in a fiscally responsible way, in a way that really is representative of our community as a whole.
So, and the reason I bring all of that up, like we said, this this plan was adopted a couple of years ago, so I don't mean to relitigate all of that, if you will.
But
I think the reason why that's relevant is because this branding effort now that we're looking at, that the Strategic Planning Committee is looking at, it opens itself, I think, again, to some of the criticism of the same people and some of the same critics that said, well, I'm not sure that this was, you know, exactly what we were thinking through the strategic plan. This comes out of that. So it kind of also has led people to criticize why is a branding, a new branding of the city needed, what would this involve?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, it's important to state that this was a preliminary conversation to make council aware that there has been the discussion around branding brought up, mm-hmm. and that the city of Findlay government has a role to play in it. So one thing that I don't, looking back at the strategic planning committee meeting last week, that I don't think I communicated very effectively was that the portion that I was asking city council contribute was one piece of a much larger potential project. So with that, other partners like Blanchard Valley Health System and the Alliance were going to also be carrying a very heavy portion of this project through in-kind contributions of the kind of Convention and Visitors Bureau website being a larger resource to all community organizations, as well as then Blanchard Valley Health System lending their photography and videography teams to help put together more materials to advertise our community. And I know that at first blush you say, well, why does a brand matter to the citizens of Findlay? And I want to be clear, it's not a City of Findlay government brand, it's a community brand. And that gets really convoluted, but the important thing to walk away is, when you're telling somebody about our community or they look up Findlay, Ohio, what is the message that they get when they walk away from interaction? And one of the things when I say I'm from Findlay, Ohio, anyone that has kind of driven through this area all the time will say, oh, Flag City, USA, do you guys make flags in Findlay?
Yeah.
Well, no, you know, no. You know, Flag City USA was a congressional designation because of our patriotism, which is an important part of our community's history
right.
and future, right? We're very patriotic. But when you're trying to recruit someone, a business or a worker, to come plant themselves in Findlay and be a part of our community, what is that first kind of interaction and story that they get about who is Findlay, Ohio? And that's the process of branding works through. What is that message and that consistent message and brand that we can help people understand who we are as a community, and how do we communicate that when they are interacting here for a visit, a tournament, when they're here going to the University of Findlay, when they are looking up Findlay, Ohio, because they interacted with someone from our community and want to learn more, or they got a job offer or are looking at jobs in this area.
Mm-hmm.
How do we help them better understand who we are as a community? And a brand is something that can help with that.
So what kinds of resources would that involve? I mean, were you talking about a new logo for the city, a new slogan for the city? You know, what sorts of assets or resources would be involved in creating that brand, or is that, you know, part of what needs to be decided?
A little bit of both. So we certainly would have most likely a kind of a community logo, new slogans, again, vision statement, not just for city government, but for the community, those types of items. But it also could assist in, hey, what are the images that most appropriately represent our community? Hey, individuals that are representing our community and trying to recruit someone, here are key things that you should be saying on your materials, or here are kind of images that you can use or things you can direct them to. So plus then, I think there's some of the aspects, again, that through that process we would have identified. So it's similar to a business trying to put together how do we communicate our service and product to a potential consumer, transferring that similar kind of toolkit, wording, imagery, that's really what makes up a brand. And so it is very convoluted, but I think that it's a worthwhile exercise. And what I heard from council is they recognize the benefit that that provides in having a consistent message from all of our different organizations, schools, government, business community, excuse me. But that they don't want to be the lead organization, and I completely agree with that. So that's why we had that conversation, is to get that finger on the pulse read from them and see what level of involvement they want to have. And then I'll be going back to the group that had really initiated this conversation. It wasn't one that I had started. It was one that I heard, hey, these other organizations are starting to kind of work towards this.
Mm-hmm.
This was something what's identified as part of our strategic plan. we should be involved in the discussion, and then what does it look like? So that's why I took it to City Council, and now I'll be going back to that group to identify how we want to move forward with that feedback, and if I go back to Council for financial support, or if we tweak our approach, kind of just looking at timing of things. It sounds like maybe from some of the other stakeholders that they may want to try to focus on a couple of other items first, and then if necessary, engage an outside consultant to assist with the kind of more nitty gritty items. But we think that there is some low hanging fruit that we might be able to address first.
So if the strategic planning committee is not sort of the lead on this and kind of taking the bull by the horns and directing all of this, who would be then?
That is to be determined. I would assume that the Alliance will take a large role in it because obviously they are kind of the lead face for visitors to Findlay, as mm-hmm. well as obviously with economic to businesses. And then the Chamber has good reach, obviously, within all of our existing businesses, with especially small businesses. So I think they will most likely take the lead. But again, that is kind of to be determined. I'm meeting with some of the stakeholder group tomorrow. And certainly residents and stakeholders will have an opportunity to engage, as they always do, right? If you have feedback on how we can better represent our community and tell our story, folks can reach out all the time. And I get emails like that all the time. Hey, yeah. I think we should be involved in this. Or, hey, I saw this community doing X, Y, and Z that I really like. And we're able to investigate that and sometimes adopt those practices or just kind of keep that in mind when we're doing things that tell the Findlay story.
So still very much in the preliminary stages on this work of creating this coordinated community identity. And we will stay tuned for more of the specific details to be determined as that all is forthcoming. Again, Findlay Mayor Christina Mern, thanks very much for the update. We appreciate it.
Yeah, of course, Chris. Thank you. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Coming up day after tomorrow on the 1st of May, it is the National Day of Prayer, and locally, the local observance will be a breakfast gathering to bring Christians of all denominations together. They are calling it Findlay Prays, and joining us this morning, kind of the coordinators of this event, Pastors Dan Mesker from St. Mark's and Kirk Schneeman from College First Church of God. Thank you both for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us
this morning. Talk a little bit about the significance, first of all, of the National Day of Prayer and what you think about when you think of the National Day of Prayer.
Sure. I think the National Day of Prayer is something that I really appreciate because we talk so often about how divided or polarized things can be sometimes. This is a day when we try to come together as a community, as a nation, for the common purpose of prayer. Is something that's been going on since the 1700s, way back when they were first worried about the English and the colonists and all of the conflict. And then really since 1952 during the Korean War, when there was all sorts of worry about, are we entering another major war?
Yeah.
The nation came together, and every year since that year, there's been this day that's been set aside for us to kind of come together and to be united across denominations, across faith to be praying for God's providence and just for one another.
That theme of unity is one that we have actually kind of talked about, you know, in the past, and the idea of setting aside political differences and all of these other things that divide us. And not that many months ago, we had a long conversation about that and an effort locally. This is kind of an extension of that.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely an extension of it, and it's part of why I love that it's multi-denominational, multi-church. It's why I was excited when I got in contact with Kirk and realized he had kind of the same heart and same vision for that. And so I was really excited that we could, like, two different churches, two different denominations, but really say, hey, we're one church. We are one church together here in Findlay. And be able to kind of bring some of that unity together.
Yeah, Kirk, that's what I was going to ask in kind of jumping on board, making this happen this year. What drew you to be a part of coordinating this for the community?
I moved to Findlay last year after almost 9 years in Toledo, and we had a vibrant group in Toledo of local congregations working together, participating together, particularly on the National Day of Prayer. Mm-hmm. And when I began exploring what was happening in this city, I came across the event that Dan coordinated last year at the Marathon Center with mm-hmm. the help of the mayor. And I reached out and said, I'm really excited that congregations in Findlay are doing things together, and I can't wait to get to town and participate. I like to say there's only one church in Findlay with multiple congregations. And the more that we can collaborate together, there's a expression in scripture that says one Lord, one faith, one baptism, and we have way more in common than we have apart.
Yeah.
There's often the question of where do we draw those lines and where are differences and are they irreconcilable at some point? But anyone that believes in Jesus, that he died and rose from the dead, and that the scriptures are our basis of authority and we're seeking to follow Christ, we're on the same team, even if we may have a pipe organ versus a drum set versus a two-hour service or a short service, whatever. Yeah. There's various expressions of the kingdom of God, the church of Jesus in Findlay, and yet we can all come together. And I'm really excited about this event where we can come together for an hour and praise and pray. So when we say Findlay Prays, it's P-R-A-Y-S, but there will also be P-R-A-I-S-E involved. It's kind of a play on words in a sense, particularly in a radio context where you can't see the word. Right. But on the National Day of Prayer, we said, let's have the Church of Findlay come together to pray, and we will praise as well. So it'll be alternating between music and prayer.
And as we were talking a little bit before we went on the air, there is a significance that this happens so soon after Easter.
It's. I think that sometimes we kind of get into the Easter thing. It's like, okay, I'm done with church now till Christmas. I think our hope is, you know, this falls somewhere between Easter and Pentecost and kind of the birth of the church. And mm-hmm. so there's something in the middle of all of this where, I think it's significant that we come together and that we share in our common faith with one another.
That's kind of what I was getting at. That is a holiday that should remind us of the commonality of our faiths and the things as Christians that we all have in common.
Correct.
Right there.
Yeah, in John 17, Jesus prays a prayer for those who will believe. So it's a future-oriented prayer. The only prayer I know that he prayed specifically for us in Findlay, Ohio in 2025, although that's not in the text, but he says for those who will believe.
You can assume. You can kind of extrapolate that.
And the prayer is very simply unity. He says, I pray that they would be one as, Father, you and I are one.
Yeah.
And I think if Jesus is praying for our unity, that we should be praying for that unity, and we should do whatever we can to be an answer to that prayer.
As you mentioned, a number of congregations, a number of churches are involved in this event on Thursday morning.
Yeah, I think we have 9 churches involved in an official capacity, but our congregations involved in an official capacity. But I think our hope is that that it wouldn't be limited to that, that folks would come out. It's at 7:30 at Weinbrenner Auditorium. It is a breakfast, but breakfast by the it's donuts and coffee.
Yeah.
So there you go. There you go. I hope that it's something where and even if you don't belong to a church that you'd come out. And one of the things that I really love about it, and this was something that Kirk kind of brought along, is like, hey, let's have 2 pastors praying at a time. In most cases, it's going to be pastors from different churches that are going to be up there together. So you might see people who have very different, like what they do on Sunday morning might look very different, but they're going to be there praying for the same thing together. Mm-hmm. I hope that, it's not just limited to the churches that are officially involved, but that others come. And if you can't be there, you know, set your alarm for 7:30 and wake up. Set it for 7 so you can be awake enough to pray at 7:30. That's a good idea.
The other part of actually being there that will be interesting, given the fact that there will be so many different denominations, different churches represented, is there will be some sense of the different ways that we honor and praise God. Because everybody, as you were alluding to, everybody does this a little bit differently and brings their own sort of spin to it, if you will. So,
yeah, it should be a great variety of music, a great variety of prayer and prayer styles. And if you love Jesus, come out.
Yeah. We have a link on our webpage for more information about Findlay Praise, the gathering to bring Christians of all denominations together for the local observance of the National Day of Prayer. It is happening on Thursday morning. Weinbrenner. Go to goodmornings.net to learn more. And once again, Pastors Dan Metzger and Kirk Schneeman with St. Mark's and College First, respectively. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us this
morning.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Information that makes a difference. Good Mornings with Chris Oaks on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
So, was this yesterday that this happened in Chicago? Bags of money ended up falling off a Brinks Home Security truck as it rolled through one of the suburbs of the Windy City. Last week. So it's a week ago. And apparently no arrests have yet been made on that. Over $300,000 in cash fell from the trucks in bags onto the street, according to reports. Somehow the back door of the truck opened up by unknown means, according to the official report, resulting in bags filled with money falling onto Austin Boulevard. Up to 100 citizens made a mad dash for cash and then fled the scene. Again, so far, no arrests have been made. I saw that story and I thought, how can no arrest? It's been a week. How can they make no arrest? Do they not have cameras on those? I mean, on my vehicle, I've got backup cameras. I've got, lane departure cameras. I've got oncoming traffic cameras. I've got sensors that tell me if there are people too close or too far behind. There are cameras all around my vehicle. I'm not carrying $300,000 in cash. You would think that there would be plenty of video where you could identify the people who absconded with the money. But so far, no arrests have been made. Folks at Brinks might want to check the locks on their trucks moving forward. What else is going on in the broken news, the odd and unusual side of the headlines? You remember yesterday we had the story out of the Netherlands where a valuable painting, it was a print of an Andy Warhol. It was just a print, but it was still worth like $17,000 of this rare artwork by Andy Warhol, somehow got discarded as a city hall in some city in the Netherlands was being renovated. They were supposed to store it and then ended up throwing it all out. Well, now comes word from Rotterdam that a valuable painting at a museum there sustained damage after a child scratched it. The museum confirmed the incident and said that they are seeking advice on conserving the piece. The damaged painting is described as a meditative color landscape. Will undergo restoration treatment. The identity of the child has not been disclosed, and the museum declined to comment on the cost of the damage. Painting by Mark Rothko, who is known for his abstract works, and passed away in 1970. So he's not making any more of this art. His paintings have fetched millions of dollars at auctions. One, in fact, back in 2012, sold for $86.9 million. I don't know how much this painting was worth. This kid just scratched at the museum. I would question the museum's practices if you're putting artwork that valuable within reach of small children. You know what I mean? Maybe you want to hang it a little higher. The moral of the story is that I think the past couple of days, stories have proven that people in the Netherlands cannot be trusted with valuable artwork. They just can't be trusted. They just don't know what they're doing. Valuable artwork, apparently. A couple of other items in the broken news. Speaking of the international file, did you hear the story of the mountain climber in Japan who needed to be airlifted off of Mount Fuji? He climbed up Mount Fuji, famous mountain in Japan, and on the climb, he got stranded. And they had to rescue him from the mountain, airlift him off the mountain back to safety. And then, just days later, they had to rescue the same person from the same mountain again. That's because it turns out the climber was actually a Chinese student living in Japan. It says here, he had to be saved for the first time after being stranded due to lost equipment. Rescuers then got a call 4 days later after the same person returned to retrieve his lost phone. He left his phone on the mountain when he was rescued the first time, so he went back to get it. And sure enough, he got stranded the second time. Officials point out that the climbing season is between early July and early September. Potential climbers scaling the peak outside of that time frame are warned against it because of unsafe weather conditions. Because why is life worth living if you don't have your phone, apparently? He went back to get his phone! And, of course, he got stranded again to rescue him a second time. All right. Did you hear about this story in the news? The U.S. Navy says that a $60 million jet has been lost at sea after it fell overboard from an aircraft carrier. In a statement, the Navy said the F/A-18E Super Hornet fighter was under tow in the hangar bay, of the USS Harry S. Truman when the aircraft rolled off the carrier and sank below the waves. It just rolled off the ship and into the ocean. Into the Black Sea, I guess. Apparently, there were a couple of crew members on board. They were able to get out. One sailor suffered a minor injury. But everybody's going to be okay. An investigation is underway. How would you like to have been the low-level enlisted man whose job it was to chalk the wheels of the $60 million fighter jet on board a ship at sea? Because, you know, waves. How would you like to be the guy who is responsible for chalking the wheels and... somebody's got some explaining to do. There might be a demotion involved, I would think. Yeah, not going to be able to salvage that fighter. That's it. And lastly here, and the day, broken news of the day, the odd and unusual side of the headlines. This is one of the exceptions to the rule. Generally, as we've often said, it is not funny when people die. If there's a fatality involved, those stories generally don't make the broken news because there's nothing funny about people losing their life. But sometimes the circumstances are so bizarre or there's something so weird about the story that even that we can't help ourselves. And this is one of those stories out of Germany where police are investigating the possible murder of a best-selling crime novelist who was found dead on her houseboat. Alexandra Froelich started her career as a journalist and then wrote the bestseller, My Russian Mother-in-Law and Other Catastrophes. She was found dead on her houseboat. Police have ruled that she died as a result of violence, and they're looking for any witnesses to interview to gather further information. I just wonder, have you talked to the Russian mother-in-law? That that would maybe seem to be a prime suspect if her best-selling book is My Russian Mother-in-Law and Other Catastrophes. That might be the first person that I would want to talk to, the Russian mother-in-law. I'm just saying. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
When you're behind the wheel, it's okay to rock out to your music, but it's not okay to interact with your phone screen and electronic devices while driving. In most cases, anything more than a single touch or swipe is against the law. That means no texting, no typing, no scrolling, no shopping, no browsing. If an officer sees a violation, they can pull you over. So remember, Ohio, phones down. It's the law.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. As one digital media expert recently put it, trust in the internet hasn't just declined, it has collapsed under an avalanche of AI-generated noise. It's to the point where Americans believe only 41% of the content that they consume online is accurate, fact-based, and created by a real human. In fact, Americans believe, in this Talker Research poll, 23% of the web content out there is purposely misleading, according to survey respondents. The problem is, in this online house of mirrors, 78% of Americans can no longer distinguish between the real and the artificial. So we know that a lot of it is fake, but we are not very good at distinguishing between what's real and what's not. The average American comes across information that they know or suspect was generated by AI about 5 times per week. But despite those suspicions, less than a third, only 30%, were able to differentiate if a product or service review was written by an AI chatbot or an actual human being. When they put people to the test, only 30% were able to tell the difference. 82% of the 2,000 respondents in the survey agree that businesses and vendors should be legally required to disclose if AI is used in their customer service, marketing, or other content. Problem is, those are the people that you can trust, businesses and publishers that would be honest enough to do that are the ones you could trust anyway. The ones that you can't trust are ones that you can't trust to be honest when it comes to that. So I'm not sure if that's necessarily the answer, is to make that requirement, because the people who are purposely trying to deceive you would just ignore that rule anyway. Kind of interesting. According to the survey, the most common information that people know or suspect was generated by AI includes social media posts, 48%, news articles, 34%, and chatbots at 32%. Well, lo and behold, the Mayflowers are here. It's not technically May yet, but the flowers are in bloom, and we get into the whole spring thing. The weather is finally broken and got beautiful days ahead. Perfect time to get outdoors with some programs and events to talk about from the Hancock Park District, including one coming up this weekend, right?
Yes, there's a few things, but yes, it's our annual fish festival. Though the weather's not going to be as warm as it is today, and then it's in the morning, so it's going to be even a little chillier. But yeah, we've got Saturday, May 3rd.
And it might be raining, but that's not going to
stop. I mean, yeah, it's got to be like storms to kind of stop. So we have our 27th annual fish festival taking place out at Riverbend Recreation Area there at Gertz Lake. It's from 8 until 11. Registration starts at 7:30 there at the Lakefront Activity Center. And this is for kids ages 4 to 15 with an adult. So we asked adults to pause. We're going to have trout put in on Friday sometime, and so we asked them to pause fishing until after the event. I mean, there's plenty of fish.
Yeah.
The kids aren't going to fish everything out. But yeah, you get registered and then we get your name and there's door prizes. And actually, WFN is one of our sponsors, so we thank you for that. It's just a fun time. We're going to have bait for sale on site, but you can also, of course, bring your own. And I used to be in charge of the event for years when I first started working for the parks. And, you know, you get out there to get things set up and there would be people out there before I got, they get their spot.
Yeah.
They got to get their spot for good fishing. So it's just a great fun activity, you know, grandparents, parents with the kids, take them out and fish.
Very
and,
good.
And stuff.
Now, do the kids have to have a fishing license? Or
no, and that's why we do 4 to 15. So if you are 16 and up, you do have to one. So we do it for the kids. That way, nobody has to mess with a license. Gotcha. So after 11 o'clock, a lot of families will stay and parents and can fish. I don't know if it's free fishing weekend. A lot of times it coordinates. For years, it had coordinated with that. I'm not sure when that's happening this year, if that's still the same. But if normally, yes, if 16 and up, you do need a valid Ohio fishing license.
But this is not a catch and release event.
Correct. You got to keep what, so you better like eating fish.
Yeah.
I would think. I mean, why would
you're
going to
you're going to have fish for dinner.
Trout, right?
And, yeah.
Sounds delicious.
All right.
So right, and, rain or shine.
And fresh, you said. It's just going to be freshly stocked. So
freshly stocked.
Fresh fish.
On Friday. So, yes, Fish Festival 8 to 11. So if you don't want to get there right away at, like, crack of dawn and get your, I mean, we've had people that come in a little bit later, you know, and fish. That's fine. Or even later in the day if you want to miss the event. But but it starts at 8 o'clock with fishing.
All right. So that is this Saturday. What else is going on in the month of May to highlight here?
Well, another thing happening on Saturday for our adults is we're starting up our archery instruction for the season.
Oh, okay.
And so also taking place Saturday, May 3rd. So this is for adults ages 16 and up at 10 o'clock. Of course, our archery takes place in the Dole Lake area there at Oakwoods Nature Preserve. It's $10 per person, and we do need you to register by the Friday before. So we're going to have one of our staff lead it. We're archery certified. And so all equipment, everything's there. If you've never shot a bow, if you haven't shot a bow, a lot of people are like, I did it in sixth grade outdoor camp at school. Like, we give you, instruction, everything. And so, yeah, it's kind of a fun activity. So that's taking place for, adults on the 3rd. And then for our youth, it's later in the month. And so that's on Friday, May 30th. And youth, we're changing it a little bit this year. Youth, we're making ages 9 to 15. We were doing a teen category, and we're like, we're just splitting it now, so we've got our adults and our youth.
Okay.
So that's going to be a little bit different. As, same thing, $10 per person. On Friday, it's taking place at 1 o'clock. So by that time, I think most schools are out of session by the Friday. This is the Friday after Memorial Day weekend. Again, we need to sign up by the day before. Same thing. We're going to have all equipment and stuff. So, and then more will happen throughout the summer. So we do other instruction. And then what we do is called an open shoot. So if you've ever taken an instruction course and just want to come out and shoot, those are the times to do that. But let me know, archery is starting to get back in the swing of things.
Sounds good.
For starting in May.
What else is happening here as we head into the latter stages of spring? And as you mentioned, early summer, given Memorial Day.
Memorial Day, so that means Zonta Landings is going to open. So that starts the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend. Of course, that's at Riverside Park. And we're going to have single kayaks, double kayaks. New this year, we have new pedal boats.
New pedal boats.
I haven't seen them. We have them. So that'll be exciting. They're going to look like the old ones. But yeah, we've got some new pedal boats.
Okay.
Of course, that's in the old reservoir area. Nothing's changed. It's $5 for half hour rental. We have that special float option that you can go upriver to the 568 bridge and back. Rental, it starts at 1 o'clock on the weekend. So yeah, our first weekend is Saturday, Sunday, and Memorial Day. And then through December, we're open holidays. So Juneteenth and 4th of July, which I think is a Wednesday or Thursday this year.
Okay.
And then weekends through Labor Day. So that'll be happening. And then also, once we get boats out there on the water, if groups want to sign up, they can call the office and talk to me about, you know, you want to go out during the week, or we'll get groups that want to come out and do kind of a fun float. they can set that up by calling the office, which is 425-7275. So just to put that out there, if we've got staff available to get you on the water, okay, we will happily do that for you.
As long as we're on the subject of things coming up as we head into the summer season, which is right around the corner, the camp programs are filling up very quickly.
Yes, a lot of them are full. We do have some spots. I know in our preschool camps, those are our 4 to 5s, we have a few spots available. Okay. We have one that's for our 10 to 12. I know we have a few spots there. We have an art camp that I think is the 10 to 14 age that we've got a few spots. Our adventure day camps, I think there's one that has one spot.
Okay.
Those are the ones that fill. That's why I start. And when we went live March 1st, and they're very popular. So it's one of those to just put in your brain for next year. Mm. You know, okay, I just got to be on top of it.
But there are still a handful of openings for some of those programs.
Right. And then also, don't forget, we're talking about May, but we're working on summer right now. So by the end of this week, June listings should be on the calendar. And then by mid-May, July and August. So there's still plenty of activities that we do for kids. It's not like camps are only thing. It's just we just put those out early, and they definitely fill up early.
Yeah. Anything else in the month of May specifically that we want to highlight?
Well, again, just getting outside. We're doing an outdoor play program at Oakwoods Nature Preserve on Wednesday, May 21st. This is at 6 o'clock in the evening there at the nature play area. And so this is for all ages. So if you're a kid at heart and want to bring the grandkids, we've got a lot of outdoor games like cornhole and ring toss. Of course, the nature play area, kids love that. Playing with sticks and tree cookies and building their own shelter and having a good time. So we're going to be out there, again, right outside of the Discovery Center, out of the porch there, from 6 until 8. So school's kind of winding down for everybody, right? You know, busy activities. But again, want to get out and enjoy that, hopefully, nice weather.
Yeah, when we get these nice days, like what we have had, well, certainly yesterday was a beautiful day. And you know, these kind of days, this is a great time to go to the parks, maybe go to a new park, one that you haven't explored before.
Right. And all of our parks are on our HancockParks.com. Of course, I'm all about programs, but there's also a drop down that has all of our park locations. So most are familiar with Litzenberg and Oakwoods and Riverbend.
Right.
But we've got some river access sites, some of our conservation areas. We have paths that you can get to. So everything's listed there. Are there picnic tables? Is there a playground there? Right. Venture, you know, go to the new parks, new places. Wildflowers are out right now, so it's a great time. Not too many mosquitoes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's one of those where, and not too hot. I don't like the heat. So if you want to get out and venture, I mean, now's a great time. Any time's great to be out in nature. Yeah. But right, for some, like I said, it's starting to get a little greener, the flowers, the warmer weather.
Yeah.
Definitely a great time to go out, the parks.
Have lunch or have dinner, take a walk.
Take the dog, go for, a leisurely hike outside.
And more information on all of the programs, events, activities, all of that at the website, right?
Yes, HancockParks.com.
Very good. Again, Michelle Rumschlag with the Hancock Park District with us this morning talking about what's happening coming up in the month of May. Michelle, thanks very much for dropping by.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Once again, a reminder, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net, which is back up and running now. Our apologies. Yesterday, it was down for a little while. We had some technical issues and got those glitches worked out. So everything is functioning and back to normal. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.